there's a lot of things to be managing when you're talking about chronic illnesses or cancer or anything that has, you know, a long recovery period with lots of doctor's appointments, health insurance, all the things that you're navigating, which is like what I call ADHD kryptonite. Like, you know, like the stage of life when you're getting into the healthcare, death logistics, everything that you encounter is like where our brains just stop working.
Welcome to the ADHD Essentials Podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Mahan. I'm an ADHD professional who's been working in the field for 10 years. I'm on the organizing committee for the International Conference on ADHD and a board member of the Men's ADHD Support Group. If you're not already a part of it, I highly recommend joining the ADHD Essentials Facebook community. I'll be going live in that community every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, sharing wall of awful strategies, communication strategies, time management strategies, just general ADHD strategies, supports, and tips. The Go Lives are made up of roughly half an hour of content, and then another half an hour or so of me answering whatever questions people may have posted. Welcome to the show. In today's episode, we're talking to Anita Robertson. Anita is an ADHD and relationship therapist, a licensed clinical social worker, whose goal is to help individuals and couples understand ADHD and find the right systems that work for them. Anita talks to us about navigating the challenges of being in the sandwich generation while also having ADHD. We discuss caring for neurodiverse children and ailing parents, the impact it takes on our executive function, how it affects our relationships, and the toll it can have on our well-being. Of course, we also talk about tools and strategies for navigating this time in our lives. All right, let's get rolling.
I am Anita Robertson. I am a psychotherapist in Austin, Texas, and the author of ADHD and Us, A Couple's Guide to Loving and Living with Adult ADHD. I work a lot with ADHD adults, ADHD relationships. I also created the ADHD Relationship Bootcamp, which is a great way for couples to build skills through games, challenges, and play.
Before we like trick everybody and they're like, oh, it's a couples conversation. It's not. We're going to talk about ADHD and the sandwich generation and kind of managing the dual challenges of being a parent and also having aging parents who are maybe not in the best of health. Because we've both dealt with that over the past few years. My audience mostly knows what's happened to me. Are you comfortable sharing a little bit of what went on for you? And then we'll play
from there. Sure. And I also think relationships really play a key role in this stage of life as well. Yeah. So 2023 was probably one of the hardest. I always thought that with ADHD, parenthood and motherhood was like, whoa, what is this stage? But my mother-in-law's health, she's been in and out of the hospital so many times with super high medical bills and a lot of like, is she going to make it? Not like these really big ups and downs. And then my dad unexpectedly, like he had some health stuff going on and he unexpectedly died in the hospital in April.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Thank you. And so it's just, it's been a whirlwind, you know, because we had a little bit of that sandwich caretaking. And then it's just been like amplified this last year, which has really led me to look more at kind of like ADHD family dynamics. So everybody in my family has ADHD. So like, woo, it is interesting, right? It is interesting when it gets stressed and, you know, when somebody dies and a parent might have probably had ADHD and all of this stuff. So finally ready to kind of talk about it and getting out of barely keeping myself afloat. And you know, there's not enough resources out there, especially for ADHD. So in true ADHD fashion, I was like, okay, I'm going to like record some of the things that are helpful and like, you know, get this all together at a later date, because it is just too much. It's too much for anybody. And then for ADHD, it's really hard. And I reached out to a lot of the other people, you know, from the conference and the ADHD expert community. And I was really disappointed on how little people had as resources. And so that was part of my desire to kind of document a little bit of my journey, which I know you are doing as well, and just kind of say, okay, what's helpful, what isn't, put some guides together. And I know that we both did that at the last CHAD conference, as well as kind of really connecting with so many ADHDers. And it was such a powerful session because everybody who came into that room was really needing it, myself included, and my co-facilitator included. So I think it's just a topic that's kind of near and dear to my heart right now, and just want to get more resources out there and have more resources, you know, because we're still in the thick of it with my mother-in-law. So hopefully her health continues to improve, but it kind of still a rocky road.
Just to provide context for the folks listening, my son has obsessive compulsive disorder, episode 250. We'll catch up on that. My other kid, of course, had some trauma backlash from Nate's OCD. Gavin kind of had his own stuff afterwards. Once Nate was better, Gavin could let himself fall apart for a little bit. And at the same time, my dad was sick. Apparently I come from hearty stock because he's still around and doing a lot better now. Like he got the help he needed, thankfully. But now my mother-in-law is doing some stuff too. And it's a little different. It's less intense because she lives in New Jersey. We live in Massachusetts. So what we can do is pretty significantly diminished. And her treatment involved a suppressed immune system. So we're not even allowed to visit. Like it's sort of, we can talk on the phone and stuff. So that it's both good and bad, right? Like it's less executive functioning upkeep and effort and disruption, but it also stinks that we can't be there for her because we're not allowed to be, and geography. So yeah, so and that, and also it's my mother-in-law who is like, my wife and I are sort of, her family's her job, my family's my job. Like we kind of silo things a little bit, or that's not the right word, but kind of ish. Not that we don't love each other's parents and stuff, but just that's the way we tend to approach things.
And I think the emotional impact is different. You know, with my mother-in-law, like, you know, I love her and care about her, but the emotional impact is different for me. But then I fall into the more like parent executive functioning roles. So my husband can go, like he's gone. He's from Mexico City. So he's gone so many times. And like in February, he was gone for like 3 weeks and we had the freeze in Austin and school was shut down for a whole week. Like we were trapped inside and I was just like, what? So, I mean, I think it falls back and forth. Like he's really, you know, since my dad died unexpectedly, he really carried the load in so many ways. And I'm so grateful for that. But I think it's, even if they are siloed, then that person is kind of taken away of this support when you have like, you know, high needs kids and all the other things that come with midlife. That is really the peak of your executive functioning demands.
I kind of took that for granted, I think. I'm the parent who does the executive function stuff for the kids. And even when everything was going to hell with my dad, I was still like, nope, this is my job. And some of that is ADHD, right? Some of that is ADHD trauma where there's been so many jobs that I fell down on because I have ADHD and I screwed it up that at this point, if something is my job, I don't know that it's a trauma response exactly, but I just refuse to drop it, right? I'm just like, no, that's my job. That's my responsibility. I can't fall down on that because it'll make me feel even worse than I already feel. And I'm sure I'm not the only person with ADHD who has that kind of a response to ending up taking on too much and having trouble asking for help and all that stuff. Because ADHD means that we often didn't do that. So into adulthood, when we finally have the skills to be able to do those things, we overdo it.
It's like the superstar, you know, overfunctioner. And two, I think there's an importance of you don't want to lose yourself, right? Whether it's with work or your kids or this family, there's this pull that can be so sudden and so long term that it's hard because you're losing so many aspects of it. There's so many secondary losses in this time. I was really thankful that like my husband and I had like, you know, worked through any gender norms and like he's fully functional, I'm fully functional, like, you know, carrying everything because I was too needed with everybody else because I also had a very disabled brother who was under my dad's care whose needs were the highest immediately after his death. So yeah, so there was a secondary loss for me of just like, you know, not being able to parent and not having the bandwidth, not just, you know, he had to come second and he was a little bit older. He's now 7. So it happened, but it is hard. You know, it's hard to not be able to be there or not be able to have the joy or just this immense sadness. I think it's hard for him as a kid and it's also hard for me. But yeah, I definitely, it was just too much. So I had to let go. But I do think the pandemic really, motherhood and the pandemic and the work that I've done has helped me really say no. You know, when you don't have that skill and you don't know how to balance that, it is such a hard time because everything is urgent. Everything is a crisis. There's so many needs and it's a recipe for that burnout. a lot of times, like you're talking about, like with your, like with my mother-in-law or your dad, this is not like a, oh, they're in the hospital and now they're out, everything's okay. Like there's a lot of things to be managing when you're talking about chronic illnesses or cancer or anything that has, you know, a long recovery period with lots of doctor's appointments, health insurance, all the things that you're navigating, which is like what I call ADHD kryptonite, like, you know, like the stage of life when you're getting into the healthcare, death logistics, everything that you encounter is like where our brains just stop working. Like, you know,
it's all paperwork. It's all paperwork and scheduling and disruptions. Kryptonite is the best word for it. And also, like I've said, at least to my wife, if I had a job, meaning I was employed by someone, I wasn't self-employed, I would have lost my job. And I don't know that I would have gotten another one if I had not been working for myself. Like the only reason I didn't get fired over the course of the, since mm-hmm. the pandemic hit, is because I'm my boss and I get it. I'm like, no, it's fine, Brendan. Like fall down to only two clients. It's understandable because your kid is in the hospital with obsessive compulsive disorder and your dad is also, his health is declining. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a whole lot of stuff happening. It's understandable. And you can afford to only have two clients. You'll build it back later, right? Like that stuff is hard. It's really tricky.
And we don't have any social supports in the US. And that's what makes this amplified here compared to other places that do have like paid time off. Because caretaking is a very important responsibility. And it should mm-hmm. be supported of being able to, you know, receive your income, have your job, all these things, like whether it's taking off or when you have a new child, because we're like the only country that doesn't have paid paternity and maternity leave legally required. Those are the secondary losses too. Like I was really excited to kind of finally do some things in my career 2022, 2023, because it's kind of coming out of the pandemic, you know, there's childcare again, my kid could go to school. And then it was just like all those losses, right? You know, I had to cancel groups. Thank goodness I did. I had no clue how hard life would be. But, you know, like that, mm-hmm. that other responsibility of when you are a solopreneur, like, yes, you can say no. So it sounds like you were good at saying no for your job. But then you also have those consequences of like, whether it's, you know, the loss of income or the undoing, right? The undoing of things like refunding people money, emailing them saying, sorry, I can't see you, like finding referrals. Yeah. Like there's still a lot of work. Whereas like maybe if you're in a company, you can just say peace out. Somebody else can be in this responsibility. Yeah, it's tough. And most of us in midlife are in the peak of our careers. Like we might be managers or we're getting these goals that we really wanted. And then, that have higher demands, that have, you know, less flexibility because people need you.
My losses are all mm-hmm. professional. Podcast took a huge hit. Will Kerbs got like 5 million downloads at this point. Like he's doing amazing. I'm like 1.5 million because when all that stuff would be ramping up, because COVID eventually like podcasts mm-hmm. ramped up because people had nothing else to do. My podcast shut down at that time. Like when a lot of the stuff that like was, oh, I could be taking advantage of this, I was prioritizing my family instead. And so I didn't, right? I had friends who were like, you must be making money like crazy because everybody's kids are home and they all need mm-hmm. help. Like, and that's you, like that's your whole deal. And I was like, yeah, but you know who else's kids are home? Mine. And my kids win. My kids beat money. So instead of like doubling and tripling my income went down. And it's just because that was how things needed to be prioritized. And thank God mm-hmm. I did that. Because if I had been chasing money when Nate's OCD spiked, that would have been an even harder thing to pivot on. And also like the podcast was, I was about to get monetized like a week away. I was supposed to go tour a college that wanted to advertise on the show. And we had to cancel the tour because it was scheduled for the first week of COVID.
Oh, my goodness.
And then that was the end of that. Yeah, it was like bananas. And there was a private school tutoring mm-hmm. school thing that also wanted to advertise. And that shut down. Yeah, it's because my stuff starts at COVID and then continues until, I don't know, like 6 months.
Yeah, I can totally relate because like my book came out in 2020, right? Like, you know, the worst time ever and all of those other things. And same, I think it's really important to know what your priorities are because like I'm glad that I've chosen my family every single time. But yeah, there's been a lot of lost opportunities or a lot of lost dreams that I was really excited about, you know, too, like of things that were fun for me and the passion projects. those are losses as well. And so I think there is that part where, you know, knowing your values, knowing your priorities really help with those decisions. Same. I barely worked after my dad died. I just started back in the fall, and then we had another death in my husband's family, and he had to go back and the hospital. I know. So it just never seems to end. It's just, we need 3 full-time caretakers in our family unit because there's just too many. There's just too much need. Like, even if one of us stayed home, like it still would be too much to manage. But yeah, like I definitely resonate with all of those things that you're saying, that there's a lot of losses, I think, that don't even have time to be processed and acknowledged because you're just in the thick of it.
I also want to take a second to honor and acknowledge the privilege that we both have, that we were able to throttle back on our professions because we had enough of a financial cushion from our spouses that we didn't have to stay grinding just to keep a roof over our head and food on the table. I don't want that to blow by this conversation without it being called out, because I think that's
agreed.
Important. I'm sure there's folks listening who it's been harder for them than it has been for us because they've had similar experiences and have had to keep pushing and trying to keep their job because they can't afford to lose it. Like, I'm sure that there's someone listening who's had that experience, and I don't want to have that ignored.
And that's part of the reason why I get so angry at so much of this challenge is the systems that we live with. And, you know, I've lived so many other countries, like growing up and as a young adult, like I know this isn't the norm and it doesn't have to be like this. And the hardship of that, of maintaining work because you have to eat, you know, or you have to have housing. There's no social supports that you can fall back on. It's just not okay. And there's huge costs both to your own mental and physical health. But yeah, it definitely is something that at least, you know, we had some savings, or, you know, I knew eventually, you know, when my dad's house sold that we would get some reimbursement. But yeah, never have I had so many high bills in my life, both for the hospital bills for my mother-in-law, because we pay for those. And then also too, just death. Death is so expensive. And my dad didn't have like any life insurance or any of those things. And I'm still dealing with Social Security, that I guess it's a common thing that they take out the money that they should have had. And they're not even paid for the month that they were alive. By the time I started filling out those forms, my husband was needing to be in other places. And so I had to fill out the form. And basically I'm on round 3 of the Social Security office, like mailing me back the form, telling me how I did not fill it out correctly. And so like, hopefully I will be, but the first time I went into the Social Security office, I asked and they said, you know, fill it out as the executor, that will smooth things over. And then I got the feedback that no, you know, we have to fill it out like all the siblings. And then I didn't put the number of siblings. Anyways, it's just a lot of stuff. I've been talking about like the kryptonite and then on top of that grief and all the other things and the burnout and just being stretched too thin. My husband's like, why didn't you ask me to fill it out? Like, I should have looked over. I'm like, you were dealing with all of our housebreaking and like your mom and all these things. Like, you know, it's you weren't available, which is okay. But yeah, I'm dealing with the consequence of like ADHD and filling out forms and with the government, which is fantastic.
And we've talked about the executive functioning load of midlife, but also this, right? Like, it's an executive functioning load to fill in forms and to do it right. And it's heavier than a normal form, because this is like a government form. And if you screw it up, who knows what's going to go wrong and what the consequences are going to be. So there's this extra layer of pressure, which might mean we do a better job. There might be some ADHD folks who that activates them and they do better as a result. But what's going to ruin that is that at the same time that you have to worry about these forms, we're also dealing with loss and mourning and grief and stress and anxiety from other stuff. And all of that undermines your executive functions. So you're more likely to do this
wrong. And it disrupts your routines that were supporting those executive functioning challenges. Like, I came up with this little graph for the presentation of just like how all these major things that happen in midlife, how it either impairs your executive function abilities, it disrupts your routines, or it's just the executive function demands are higher, you know, like with health insurance and all the other things and just navigating the system. And the IRS, like when somebody dies, you're responsible for filing for them. And our tax code is so ridiculously complicated and you can't get any of the forms. Like, I'm surprised I have hair. It's a lot whiter and grayer with this, but it's just, you know, like it is on top of everything else that you're dealing with. The systems in the US, and I will say, because I'm dealing with death in Texas, I think they're cruel. They're not, they add to the burden. They add to the financial cost, at least in Texas. It's very predatory on the poor. And it's huge. I do a lot of grief groups here. And so some people in other counties in Texas, it's been like a year before they can get the executor, like the appointment for the court to get the power to be able to do anything. And you're maintaining everything because you can't sell a house, you can't sell a car, you have to pay the payments, all this stuff. There are certain counties that did experience more COVID death. And so those are the ones that are super backed up. And for me, I was lucky and it was like 4 months, 3 months before I could get into that. But that's just a lot to maintain. The costs are really high.
Yeah. It's not even, yes, it's a lot to maintain, but it's not just that it's a lot to maintain, particularly when we bring ADHD into the mix. If I had to do something like that, and thankfully I haven't had to yet, but if I had to do an executor of a will thing and I am going to have to wait 3 months to like follow up with that, I'm going to completely lose track of that and forget all about it. In those 3 months, I'm going to get back into my rhythm, right? That's likely going to happen. And I'm going to lose all sight of that follow up. It's just, unless I put it in my calendar and I do all my good ADHD practices, which I probably would. But if I forget to do that stuff because I'm full of grief and full of anxiety and my executive functions are down, I'll lose track of it. And I know because I have done that. My bureaucracy story that is a nightmare is at the start of COVID, somebody took out a $52,000 Small Business Administration loan in my name that was not me. Got a letter that was like, you owe $52,000 to the government. You don't have to pay it yet, just telling you. And I'm like, the what now? And I took the steps I needed to take to make sure this thing went away as far as I knew. This was so early on, I wasn't allowed to go physically into the police station to file a police report. That's how early on in COVID this was. In October of this year, I got a letter that was like, hey, you owe like $2,000 on the $52,000 loan that you took out. And I'm like, huh? I forgot all about it. And it turns out that they put a hold on all those loans. And that's why I didn't hear anything back. I thought that I had solved it and then forgot all about it. And nope, that's not what happened. So then I had to do it again. I found out 2 days ago that it's been figured out and they know it was fraud. So I'm like, huh, right? But it was unreal. And even that, I got word in October. I didn't finish that paperwork process until like a week ago.
It's so overwhelming, you know, to like our brains and also to be doing all of these things. And I think grief is normally the time where people can relate to having ADHD, right? Like you can't remember anything. Like it's hard to do the daily stuff. It's hard to brush your teeth, remember to eat, to shower. Like that is, and so you have ADHD on top of grief and, you know, and ADHD can definitely process grief in different ways. And we're more susceptible to certain things that, you know, of like, the ways that we might have coped before or still were coping, you know, we're looking at like alcohol, substance abuse, binge eating, the things that are kind of like very high comorbidities that happen when you have untreated and unsupported ADHD. And especially like losing a parent, it kind of takes you back to being a kid and it brings all these things up and it you feel untethered in the world, you know, like your safety and security is gone. And so it's a really, really challenging time. And then to fill out all these forms, like, I mean, I've definitely had some like epic meltdowns and like screams, you know, with all of it. And I'm still in the thick of it. I still haven't finished the like exact all those responsibilities. And I still have to file taxes for my dad for 2023. It just like never ends. Like there's no closure. All of that stuff is just so hard to do and to keep track of. And it's so slow with the government agencies that we have, right? It's not like, oh, I fill out a form and like, click, it's done. It's like, okay, wait for this in the mail or wait for these things, or we don't know. And just like you were talking about all of this happening in COVID when we're learning like we were relearning all of our skills, right? How to grocery shop, how to not get sick, how to maintain relationships when we can't see each other. Like, I think grief and even that dual caretaking, that's a new language. Like, that's what I felt like. I was learning a new language. And I am like the first out of my good friends to have lost a parent. And also, if the, you know, as an adult and being an executor. So it's like, I've learned all of these things that I just had no clue. And so it's like these learning, this huge learning curve when like, this is not a good time to be learning.
And it's also all that stuff is really isolating too, right? Like having a kid with high needs, losing a parent, that stuff is overwhelming and it makes us want to turtle. It makes us want to hide. I know when I was going through everything with Nate and my dad, like I would have people who wanted to hang out or talk to me or something. And I'm like, I can't, like, I don't want to, I don't have the bandwidth, I don't have the space. And sometimes there were feelings of like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about except how hard everything is. But also like, I don't really have a problem with that. Like given what I do, mm-hmm. probably isn't surprising. One of the things I love about ADHD people and love about, especially the conference, people just talk about what's real. We're not going, let's talk about, I don't know, football or the weather. We're like, no, this is what's up with mm-hmm. me. And I appreciate that because that's the conversation I want to have. I don't just want to tell you what's up with me. I want to know what's up with you. I want you to like, give me the real information. Like we can talk about football too, but if stuff is hard, like that's the air I breathe. Like I want to help with that stuff. These events become really isolating because everything is hard and what do we do with it? And I don't want to put that on someone else.
Yeah, well, we have this idea that that would be so overwhelming. And when it really isn't, because it's overwhelming to us, just like we're talking about our spouses, it's like, even in, when we're so connected, it's not as overwhelming because it's not directly impacting. And so knowing how to receive support, and one of the guides that I put together is really about how to support an ADHDer in a hard time or post-death, because that's the load they're supposed to carry, right? And we're also talking about everybody else in our circles, families, friends that don't have enough like vacation time, don't have any of those things. So they get stressed, like it's hard for them to maintain that level of support because it is a really long one. But yes, like whether it's just like you're so exhausted that you can't hang out, you don't want to like mention anything, or that you're going to be like have a demand, right? Another need to make small mm-hmm. talk or to listen to something else, or, you know, or to feel like you're being treated differently. Cause especially with grief, like the US is just really, we got some weird stuff that goes on. Yeah. Like, you know, we ignore it. We say odd things. Like, I think there's a lot more realization or awareness around it, at least coming up. And I would say like, because I lost four or five friends from my Peace Corps group a long time. This is like 5 or 6 years ago. It was a very weird thing that like in our mid 30s, so many people from this, you know, like 100 people died. And I will say mm-hmm. like the way that my friends were able to support me in that is very different than how they've been able to support me, because we've gained these skills and because I had this really weird mm-hmm. situation, you know, like the odd stuff of like, well, there's probably something good about this. And you're just like, what? Mm-hmm. These things that like sometimes we say and do, like what I can say is that I'm very grateful for having a network of friends who've done all this work, especially through the pandemic and other losses, that like they were able to really hold space and support without adding. And I think that happens where it's like, whether it's grief or your dad has cancer, everybody kind of freaks out. Like if they're close to their parents, they don't want to imagine that scenario. So they're like, are you okay? Tell me you're okay. Are you, you know, and it almost feels like this need versus the support that you really need and deserve. Yeah. Like we all need that support to carry through us. If not, it's just too much.
Something that I've noticed from my wife. So my wife is Jewish. I was raised Catholic. We're both sort of agnostic, atheistish. We don't really practice anymore. But one thing I've noticed with my wife is she has these cultural scripts that I don't have. So when her mom started getting sick, her automatic was like, their friends will send like meals to my dad, because that's part of Jewish culture, is like, oh, someone's sick, someone died, like here, bring food, right? I don't have that. Like, that's not a thing that exists in me as a cultural script of like something bad has happened, bring food or flowers or knock on the door or whatever. I don't have that automatic reflex. So I don't always know what to do, right? I don't have a starting point. I know I'm not the only American who lacks that starting point. It seems like mainstream America, when things are bad, the only thing we know to do is go like, oh, I'm sorry. And like, that's it. Like, that's the whole script. And there's nothing useful or proactive about that at all. It's just, I'm overwhelmed by what you just said, is basically what's being expressed. or I feel like if I don't note that you said something terrible, I am a bad person, is sort of what is there. And there isn't this more meaningful connecting tool. That's not like a government mm-hmm. system, but it is a cultural system that is lacking.
Oh, it is. It is. And there are like other cultures and religions that have these really beautiful things. Like I took a class in my undergrad called Death, Dying and Beyond that like we examined how everybody deals with death. And the U.S. is like, ooh, we're either so powerful of I am fully responsible of making you feel better. Or if I say something, I might make you feel bad. And then it's all my fault where it's like, wait, like you don't have that much power. Like you really don't. Like if somebody important to you dies, like you saying something doesn't take away the death. And so it's that like look away, head in the sand mentality, or that toxic positivity of like, this will be good for you. Like, cause they need it to feel, that's like what our culture gives. And that's why like it complicates the bereavement and it makes it more this individual pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You don't know how to ask for help. People don't know how to organize for help. And that's why I think the biggest thing is really community support. That mutual aid is really what gets you through this. And I also can say too, I think, cause like, you know, with all the deaths that I experienced earlier in my life, because I was that person, well, also cause I'm a therapist too. So I have like clinical experience. I took, a class on grief in my graduate programs. So I really like for my groups was the one who organized everything. The one who I read, you know, it's okay not to be okay. And like, I just did what, like, I was like, okay, I'm just doing what I'm told, but I can see why it works so much. Like, for one of my friends that died, like I messaged his wife once a month. You know, I would text our group of friends to send postcards to put all the anniversaries there and message them. And so anyways, like because I carried that, I definitely felt this overwhelming amount of support for people that were like, I'm very grateful for how you dealt with things. Like you just take a step back. And this is including taking care of my brother. That to me felt so good.
That's awesome. And it's tricky, right? Because that's a thing that has to be taught that isn't taught. In the same way that we don't get taught how to fill out forms.
I think we should change how we do the forms. Like, I just think the system should change.
Like, I'll tell you how I fill out forms. And maybe this is useful for anybody listening. But I also want to lay the caveat that I live in Massachusetts, and that is not Texas. Big difference, potentially. Yeah. If I had... like what you're describing with the social security stuff, I would just go to the social security office and be like, hi, you're filling out this form with me. That's one of my go-to ADHD accommodations is anything bureaucratic. I go there. I don't need to do this over the internet. I don't need to do a phone call. I will clear my day if I can. And I will go for the small business loan, found out about it on a Tuesday. I cleared my Wednesday to drive to Boston to go to the Small Business Administration and just be like, I don't know what's going on. Help me. That was pretty much my whole plan. But on Tuesday, I ended up contacting people over the phone who helped me a lot. So I didn't have to go to Boston, but I was all set to. And the other one that is useful, and this goes back to the executor needs, you'd be surprised what your state reps can do and what they're motivated to do because they want to get reelected. Mm-hmm. I had some unemployment issues happen for me. This is before the podcast even started, after my teaching career ended. And I ended up contacting my state rep and they went above and beyond trying to get me what I needed. They weren't able to, but it wasn't their fault. It was just like not how the thing worked. But you might find that your state rep is like, sure, okay, let's bump you up the list. I mean, you're making someone else wait a little longer, but that is a thing that happens.
I agree with those techniques. And I definitely sent some respectful, ragey, in a respectful way, but like, you know, just all the stuff of death in Texas, at least. I definitely contacted them. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard back. And I even contacted my friend who works in politics and knows half of them too. Cause I was like, this is the most, where's the petition? What is there? How do we change this? You know, but it's just like, you're in the most defeated state, you know? And so when all this stuff is over, you just have, I imagine it's just like years of recovery. But yes, I agree with those. And sometimes they don't work because I've done both.
No, and I'm not saying they're going to always work.
The thing is that the government agencies, I got told various things from different IRS people. Like, you hear different ones. Mm-hmm. I would like to have like a social security, or not social security, a social worker that's assigned to you that like works through the whole process, like just holds your hand, knows how to fill out the forms, like helps you through that. Like, that seems like would be the makes the most sense, because when you're not able to manage these things, whether it's like doctor's appointments, health insurance, you know, all the death logistics, there are some huge health and financial consequences and like bigger method. Yeah. Cause like, I've been finding it, cause also too, you know, like I ended up now like in a group project with like my ADHD brothers that I didn't sign up for. You know, and I'm like, and they got diagnosed as kids, but then I was just like, oh, okay. I'm going to use everything from my book to maintain these relationships. Cause I'm just like, okay, like lots of eagerness, but no organization. Like, how do we, you know, like, how do we stop getting holes in the walls? Because like, we're just trying to move furniture out or do something. It's just like, that kind of like catch up stuff. And so like, I've talked to a lot of friends who also maybe have like an ADHD family member or something like that. And that paralysis, which is also true with grief, just in general, like I want to be there to go through this stuff, but I can't do it. Right. Or I don't know how to organize these things. And so it's just like all these other dynamics that come into play that kind of compound when you're talking about sometimes years and years and years of avoiding dealing with the house. And then when you don't maintain a house, then you have big fixes and big consequences. And it's just like, it's just one of those things where it heightened the importance of getting the right support for ADHD kids and adults, which I think kids get a lot better support than the adults today did growing up if they were lucky enough to get diagnosed. Because like this stage has huge consequences without it. And I mean, like even, I mean, my dad had his own systems and stuff like that, but I mean, it's just, he was in pain. And so like the piles of paper, like, I mean, no system, you know, and like the IRS too, I was just like, it's so complicated. I'm like, I know he has business expenses for his little contract work that he did, but I'm like, I don't know where those are. Like, I think it's like this mix of kind of the ADHD and the ADHD dynamics, especially when you have ADHD parents, that you're like, oh, okay, wow, look at all these things that we didn't know or we didn't know how to prepare for. Or like the same, like my dad had a will, which is what we all thought we needed in Texas, but it turns out that is not the thing to have. You need a living trust to avoid this court system and probate that can be like years out, you know, that can drag it on, and it's more expensive to do that. I wish I would have been like, I'll pay for it. But even some of his friends that came to his memorial, they're just like, well, we have a will. And I'm like, I had like a trauma response. I still do. But it was like the first 4 months, like anybody asked me how I'm doing, I'm like, you need a living trust to make sure your parents have a living trust. You need a living trust. Let me explain what this is. And everyone's like, oh, you know, because I was just like, when we had met with our lawyer in 2020, they explained what it was, but we never understood it. And we never understood how complicated, at least in Texas, it is, that legal system, that you're just waiting. It's a waiting game. And it's so many stages of waiting.
A piece of that, right? Folks with ADHD, some of us have this like justice, do the right thing reflex in us. And I know when I heard about the living trust stuff, it felt like
cheating. That's what I'm saying. It's predatory. It is predatory on the poor, because I have spent way more than what a living trust costs, because you have to have a lawyer in the state of Texas. But it's just like, why do we have to make sure like poor people pay their debts, but rich people, like they just have all their assets, you know? Yeah. And we were starting our living trust, but then, you know, executive functioning challenges, like my husband, who's great at spreadsheets and all this stuff, he has all that information. I have clues. He's like, what is this? And I'm like, they're clues. They're clues for you to figure out where it is. But now I'm like, okay, I understand. And I've actually, like, in one of the guides that I have on my free guides I have for in my website for free resources for this, there's a lot of actually really good programs out there that make it a lot easier. So I did a whole bunch of research on like what are like more ADHD friendly services to help with this part, because it's hard. But then when I realized, I was like, well, it's a lot easier for me to find this information that I don't want to find than somebody else to find it, because like my brain will put it anywhere. Like, I mean, it's just with my dad, I was like, is this the okay, this account doesn't exist, this, I mean, just like we went through all of our stuff, and anytime I ripped up an old account that didn't exist, I was like, yes, nobody is going to have to look for this. Because the pain of just like being so overwhelmed with my dad's executive dysfunction in this part, partly because of his health, but like, I mean, really, I think it was like 2012 was the last time he used his filing system.
That's a lot to dig out of. And speaking of having to dig out of things, just being mindful of time, do you have any ending essentials that you'd like to share with our audience?
I really hope anybody in this stage of midlife gets, especially with ADHD, gets more resources, that we keep developing these and connecting each other to support, because it's so key. On my website, which is just anitarobertson.com, the ADHD resource page, I do have a folder that has these guides of just like midlife, of how to get your stuff in order, your documents, how to help your parents get your stuff in order, different programs to help with those health costs and navigating those systems, all the stuff that I wish I would have found. And then also that support guide gets really important. I even put like rejection sensitivity dysphoria, like really saying like, you need to have a point person who's asking. This person can't hear no, because it's crushing. It's hard for anybody to ask for help, and everybody wants to ask for help. I have a whole bunch of different things, even how to like talk about some of those vulnerabilities to the comorbidities that ADHDers do have. I just really want people to get support. And like, so I just hope, even hearing about our experiences and knowing that there's at least something out there that I think is pretty ADHD friendly, it's colorful, it's broken into simple tasks, links, that type of thing, can make it a little bit easier for you.
Hey, you're still here. Nice. Thanks for staying focused all the way through. If you have any thoughts or questions about today's episode, feel free to email me at brendan@adhdessentials.com. And don't forget to check out the website, adhdessentials.com, and visit our Facebook community. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week. In the meantime, keep focusing on improvement over perfection. 10% better is all you need.